Hello.
Déjà vu.
Whoa, everybody. Welcome to episode 59 of the Oscar White Media Podcast. I am, as per usual, your host, Chris Litzko. I'm joined this week by the rather lovely editor-in-chief of thesickfaction.com and managing director of Oscar White Media, Peter Chapman. Say hello, Peter.
Ni hao.
We're also joined this week by editor-in-chief over at ScreenDemon.com and wrestling fan extraordinaire Lewis Gaston. Say hello, Lewis.
Geez.
All right. Podcast of that. I'm sorry if I'm a bit weird this week. I've had like 3 hours sleep last night because I came back from Bradford. So, news. EA are pro-gay or something. And then people sent a letter saying, you are bad for being pro-gay and sharing positive images of gay people.
Yes. How dare you treat gays with equality and respect?
What I want to know, and I asked this on Twitter earlier, where's the Shepherd on Normandy action? Where's that? What's going on there?
What?
There's no, you can't choose to date the Normandy, can you, if you're Shepherd? Can't fall in love with a ship. That's just wrong, man.
I don't know, actually, if he can. The ship has a VI. Is he allowed to try and bone the VI?
I don't know, I've never played Mass Effect, but this is just my instant reaction. I feel that's a group that hasn't been looked at. And then what about him? What about him trying to fuck a Reaper? What about that?
Try and fuck a Reaper up.
Yeah, it's just.
Well, they let him bang aliens, so.
Yeah. That's
why
true.
Not? Let him have intercourse with whatever he relations. Wants to have sex with. Yes.
Well, that's just fucking sickening.
In the very first Mass Effect, I managed to have sex with a blue lizard woman.
I'm disgusted.
Or maybe that was a second. I can't remember. At some point, I boned a blue lizard woman. Wonderful.
And obviously, children are being forced to be exposed to this, even though it's an 18-plus game.
Yeah, this M-rated 18-plus game.
Being forced as well. Not they're not choosing to play this. They are being forced to watch it.
Those multiple branching dialogue options that you have to go through in order to set up the option to have sex with another character, that's all irrelevant. You don't make any of those choices. You are funneled into actually doing some bumming.
And if you go near the game, I heard it leaps into your hand, makes you buy it, and then forces you to play it.
Yep.
That's just like some closet homosexuals gone to their child. You have to play this game. Look at the gays. Look at the gays. Look at them. Look at them. I'm sickened by this. Then write it in. I don't even know if that's a word, but they wrote it in.
Wrote it in.
They wrote it in.
Yeah, that's what I'm always doing. I'm always writing in places.
Speaking their language now.
Yeah, it's a very. I don't know. You always get this with like the anti-gay lobby, and it's really depressing. It always just seems to me that they just don't want to have a mildly awkward conversation with their child.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that anybody that spends any amount of, like, that much time thinking about what another man does with his penis must be a closeted homosexual.
It's true. Or at the very least, bi.
The encouraging thing here is, though, that even though there's thousands of letters, the response from the general community has been overwhelmingly positive.
Like well, yes,
and especially on TSA, the general response has been, oh my God, I can't believe what
TSA bunch are just a bunch of fag hags anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the fact. We've just all been corrupted by Tough Cub. That's the thing.
Yeah, Tough Cub, and then they all start coming out of the closet.
I'm practically Tough Cub's handbag at this point.
See, now Tough Cub would force you to watch.
Tough Cub sent me a music video earlier that was hilarious.
He made
I can't remember what the guy's name was.
He made you watch Gay Men, though, didn't he? And you're oh, no, I've been corrupted.
It was amazing.
You know the TSA logo?
Yeah.
You know those, like, you've got, like, six bits that make up, like, the clock style?
Yes.
Or six axes, even.
Yeah, those. they should be different, like, rainbow colours.
They used to be, didn't they?
Why is Kev Adset online? He's supposed to be at a fucking wedding.
Yeah, we didn't mention that. Kev's not there because he's at a wedding, apparently. But now he's on
just
Skype.
Popped up online on Skype.
Unless he's on Skype at a wedding.
Ah, bollocks. Wedding on a Thursday.
Yeah, but tomorrow's a bank holiday, so that might be why.
Yeah, but it's Good Friday. Who gives a fuck about Jesus?
Well, I got a day off.
So tomorrow?
Are you religious?
Jesus.
No, but I got a day off.
So you shouldn't technically be allowed a day off?
Well, it's a bank holiday, though.
I don't give a shit.
What? But I'm also not a pagan, but I take May Day off.
See, no.
Pagan.
You're a hippie, is what you are. You're just taking it all off.
I'm not even really sure what the August bank holiday's for. It's just sort of there.
Some of them are just holidays, aren't they?
Yeah. But there's like whole great swathes of the year with no holiday at all.
Yeah, they put them in the summer so that the middle class people could get trains away and keep the economy ticking over.
We need more in like the autumn, I feel.
Yeah, we need more in the autumn because, like, you know, once I've broken up in early part of June and don't go back till September, I need a week off.
Exactly.
We should have one for Halloween.
Yeah, that'd be good. I can deal with that. I'm not really sure what we're talking about anymore. Anyway, yes, gay people, whatever. Don't hate gay people. They're all right, really. Tough Cub's all right, isn't he?
Yeah,
that's
all right.
And EA they're all exactly like Tough Cub.
But on a serious note, though, I applaud EA for doing it because, like you say, it's a positive. It's not a camp Kenneth Williams style way of doing things.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they talk about a guy losing his husband, don't they?
Yes.
Which I thought was quite a nice way of.
Yes, that's kind of the first experience in the game you have of. That's kind of the first reference to this guy being gay. Is when he talks about losing his husband in the attacks. And it's not like, I've left my husband. Oh, saucy. It's all like, it's done sensitively. And well, he doesn't go, oh, I lost my husband. Like, yeah. And Shepard doesn't go, oh, Jesus, I'm better take a step back from you. The way these Floridians would have him.
Surely Shepard
it's just
being,
a normal thing.
Shepard being Shepard should go, so you're single and I can bang you. Then, right?
Yeah. Oh, so you like the cock. Yeah.
That does seem to be Shepard's.
If only you were a blue lizard.
To me, though, that's from my casual knowledge of the Mass Effect series, that does seem to be Shepard's reaction to everything.
And to be fair, I am also currently at this moment in time, not at this exact moment in time, but in this general moment of gameplay in Mass Effect 3, trying to have my way with a lesbian. She's not having any of it.
I'm not surprised.
Oh, lesbians are so frigid.
And the other thing as well. He has sex in the third game while trying to save the galaxy from Reapers. You think he'd have his hands full with that bit?
That's the really funny thing about Mass Effect 3. They go, oh shit, Earth's being attacked. Everybody's getting killed. And he goes, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll fuck off to the Citadel and top up my fish collection.
Exactly.
At least Terrible. That's what he does when I'm controlling him.
When you get the call, you get the call. You have to answer it.
He's like, I think these fish topped up.
I'm collecting model ships. Topping up my fish tank and trying to bang lizards and lesbians.
And you're like, well, Earth is a bit fucked, but to be honest.
Look, it's shit on Earth. The number of women in this galaxy is slimming down. I'm going to take my notions where I can.
And really, this fish tank, I just got to sort it out, mate. It's doing.
Reapers are killing all life.
Yeah.
Really, what I'm doing is preserving nature.
And just model ships, sir. Model ships,
and also, you can buy a little module that goes on your fish tank that automatically feeds them, so you won't come back after 3 months flying around the galaxy and find them all dead.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
That's what I did in Mass Effect 2.
Can the Reapers kill your fish? Because that'd piss me off.
Probably.
Duh.
At some point. I haven't finished the game yet, but I'm expecting that the Reapers are going to kill everyone.
But what, really? That sounds like a bad end to the game.
Well, everybody's moaning about the ending, aren't they? So it must be bad.
That, which is what happens. The bad ending of the game is the Reapers do destroy everyone, no matter what you do.
Yeah, the bad end of the game is you pick the wrong dialogue option at some point, like 20 minutes into the game. Then that's it. It's predetermined, and at the end, the Reapers just win, and that's it.
Yeah, BioWare are like, oh, it's really complex and deep how it works out. It's just a flag at the start of the game.
Yeah, and the last scene of Mass Effect 3 is just Like
the Reaper's
shepherd
bumming everyone.
Shepherd lying on the floor with his mouth slowly filling with his own blood.
Talking about
splutters his last.
Talking of them.
Or her last, you know, you can customise him.
Oh god, right. Talking of the Mass Effect 3 ending, BioWare have announced they're putting out some new DLC, not to fix the ending, merely to clarify it, I believe is what they've said.
Yes, they're going to provide the ending with a little more clarity. Because apparently Mass Effect 3 went over and half the people playing it went, what? So then they moaned about it, and now BioWare have said, well, all right, if you're only going to be like that. And now they're going to release this DLC.
I like to imagine all this could do is just going to add some post-game scrolling text.
Well, they've said it adds some extra cinematic scenes and it adds some prologue gameplay. Epilogue gameplay.
But a cinematic scene, that could just be like the Star Wars intro. Just the text scrolls up the screen or Starfield as you sit there after you finish the game. It's just like, oh, for fuck's sake, look, here's what fucking happened. Do you not get it?
I'm kind of hoping that the prologue or the epilogue gameplay is just like the whole thing. If you get the good ending, then people survive, but they're all so elated that the epilogue gameplay is just like one long sex scene with another man and you have to hammer X to fellate.
Oh, yeah.
It just comes on with this really cheesy music, like wow, chicka, wow, wow. And there's Garrus taking his armor off.
That would be the best ending, possibly. That'd be the best possible resolution to all of this, really.
Well, who hasn't dreamt of boning Garrus as they've been playing Mass Effect? Just me.
I might play a bit of Mass Effect 1 tomorrow.
Yeah, you should. It's good.
Well, I tell you,
I can't wait to hear you talk about those Mako missions. That thing controls.
I entered into this weird deal with Davs whereby we decided that we'd play all three games, and I've got to finish the first one by the end of April, the second one by the end of May, and the third one by the end of June.
No problem.
Yeah, and then write about it at the end of the month, so I don't know. Yeah. That's that, Mass Effect 3. Peter, you've been playing Tiger Woods 13.
I have been playing Tiger Woods PGA Tour 2013.
Is it 2013 or just 13?
I think it's 2013.
I'm going to fucking look this up now. I don't trust you.
I did wonder earlier on when I was typing it, when I was telling you what I'd been playing. I thought, is it 13 or is it 20? I can't remember. Because that's the standout
Tiger
thing about
Woods PGA Tour 13.
Okay. The standout thing about Tiger Woods PGA Tour 13, is that it's not very memorable.
I'd also like to point out clearly that is not the 13th iteration of Tiger Woods games, just the one for 2013.
Yeah, no, there's been 13 PGA games. This is it.
There may well have been. I can't keep track anymore.
Yeah, there could have been 2013 for all we know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not very, it's very like last year's and quite like the year before. There's not much to make it stand out. The only thing really that I noticed, when I first started it up, the only thing that really jumped out at me is how many courses there are that you can't play on.
Yeah. Is it a lot?
Yeah, it seems to be, I would say it's only a rough guess, I'd say about half of them are greyed out that you can't play on because you have to download them.
Not just you play through the game and it's like, here are courses because you have done well.
Now, I think from what I can gather, there is a mechanic in the game whereby you sort of earn the right to download these courses. So I don't think they're like paid DLC, or I don't think they're all paid DLC. I think you just have to sort of get your experience up and then you win points and then you can download them. But for the people that don't connect their consoles to the internet, which is still quite a significant number, that's kind of a shitty deal. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that it controls slightly differently from last year, in that now the left stick has always controlled your swing for the past few years, but now how hard you push it controls how hard you swing. Whereas apparently it didn't before.
Yeah.
I kind of always thought that it had, but apparently it doesn't. So now it's based on how straight and how fast and how smooth you control the left stick, which is quite difficult when it's a tiny little left stick. So it's quite fiddly and the putting's quite awkward. But aside from that, it's just like last year's Tiger Woods game, except this year it's got Rory McIlroy on it, as it should have.
Is there still golf?
There is still golf. It still has balls and those golf sticks that people throw about.
Well, that's pretty much all you really need, isn't it?
Yeah, there's lots of grass, some sandy bits, bit of water, and every now and again they stick a flag in the ground.
And if you look at it, though, right, we've had, what is it, NBA Jam, and last year, and then FIFA Street this year. So clearly next year is going to be some kind of street, urban version of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, there should be, where you just use your golf club to hit people.
Be fun, man. It's all about taking trick shots and stuff.
And then go and cheat on your wife.
Tiger Woods Street is a getaway racing game.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so it's not...
See if you can catch up to your career.
At what point do you think they turn that... They take his name off that game and put Rory McIlroy's on?
They did at one point, didn't they?
Well, last year they toned it down. Or was it last year or the year before? The year when all that stuff about his affairs? Because there were multiple affairs.
They're currently trying to shift it more towards being... Instead of Tiger Woods... PGA Tour, they're trying to make the PGA Tour a bit more prominent, I think.
Yeah, they sort of dipped his name a bit, but his name's back again this year. It's quite prominent. And in the whole thing, it starts you off, there's a whole like mode of the game that follows his career from when he was young, and he talks over bits of it, and you get little bits of information about it. They've really focused more on him again this year, which is odd, considering he's a fucking has-been.
Mm. Yeah.
Probably. I don't know anything really about real-world golf. My experience of golf has all been in video games.
I went to the driving range.
You play the Tiger Woods game every year for us. You know nothing about golf.
No, I really like the Tiger Woods games. I just don't like the real game. The only thing is Rory McIlroy lives about 5 minutes down the road from me.
You go ask him then.
So I should.
Like, is this all right?
Oh, fuck. I know where he lives too because I sold him his house.
You sold him his house?
What's weird about that is the fact that you're not an estate agent. So...
No, I was at the time.
All right, that's all right then.
Oh, well, I wasn't. I worked in an estate agent at the time, and we sold him his house.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just selling houses, just like, yeah, well, it's not mine, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so, and he bought a house off us, so I know where he lives.
Bit of woo, so, bit of way, like that.
If anyone needs to know where Rory McIlroy lives, drop me a line. We'll sort something out.
Apparently the last time Tiger Woods won anything... was 2009.
Jesus. And that was a new girlfriend.
But to be honest, in 2009...
What was that, Father of the Year?
In 2009, no, in 2009, he did win everything.
Yeah. Last year, Rory McIlroy...
He won PGA Player of the Year, PGA Tour Player of the Year, PGA Tour leading Money Winner, Vardon Trophy, Brian Nelson Award, and the FedEx Cup Champion. All in 2009. So that seems like a lot.
Oh, the FedEx Cup champion.
Yeah.
Sounds like a shit football trophy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like the LDV Vans trophy. Yeah, I just think that at some point they're going to have to take his name off that and just make it PGA Tour and then have cover stars the way they do with the... Well, I suppose the NFL game is still a Madden game, isn't it?
Madden and FIFA. But Madden, and... Madden at this point is barely associated with John Madden anymore.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
It's kind of just called Madden.
Yeah.
It's just what it's called. They couldn't change it because the branding's too strong, I feel.
That's true, I believe.
Yeah.
So yeah, Tiger Woods 13, if you're a big Tiger Woods fan, then you'll probably like it because it's very much like...
1 to 12.
Yeah, it's very much like the last few Tiger Woods games. So there you go. Probably got new courses. I'll have to research a little bit before I start writing the review and make sure I get all that shit right, because it's probably got new courses or different courses or something in it, or old courses not in it that people will moan about. It has the Royal County Down Golf Club, which is the really good golf club that's like 40-odd miles away from me.
Mm.
So that's like my local. So it's got that, and the scenery for that looks right. Got the mountains right in the background. The mountains of Mourne sweeping down to the sea. So
they went a bit mental with the realism in that game, like last one, wasn't it, or something?
They did. I don't know.
They took like laser markers out onto all the courses.
Yeah, they did laser model them courses, and they made it look really good too. But I think that this year, I think that it possibly doesn't look quite as good as it did last year.
Mm.
I think it seems to have gone a little bit. The textures aren't quite as crisp. They do an awful lot of weird stuff with the depth of field as well, so that the focus is very narrow on the camera.
Would you also,
which is kind of a fashionable thing, but still looks shit.
Would you also agree with Penny Arcade's analysis that your caddy is an idiot?
Yes, my caddy has given me some very bad advice so far. He's given me some good advice, to be fair, but he's also given me some shit advice. I can often be heard screaming at the television, saying things like, why would I want a 5-wood for that?
Yeah.
People walking past think that I'm a little bit mad. And sometimes, he tells you, if you're just off the green, he'll tell you to use a certain club and you have to try and chip it onto the green, but he tells you to hit, and basically he's trying to make you hit the pin, so the ball hits the ground and then rolls for another 40 yards off the other side of the green.
That does sound quite stupid.
Yeah, when what he wants to be telling me to do is to sort of bring it forward 10 yards or so and just hit it up and nice soft landing.
It should connect to the internet.
He's going to get 10% of your wages.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what they get? 10%?
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, it should connect to the internet and just connect you to an actual caddy.
Yeah. There should be a room full of them in like South Korea.
It's just like, that's what you're doing is this.
All EA games now take about 20 minutes to load because they take you through all the signing into the PSN and then signing into your EA account and then downloading fucking agreements and then checking if you've got the season pass. And Jesus Christ, you sit there for about 10 minutes just looking at it like, would you hurry up?
Yeah.
Do these caddies share a warehouse with the Microsoft wives?
They should do. Be space saving.
All right. Lewis, you've been watching The Devil Inside.
Sup?
Yes. Sup? Oh, I nearly did it again. Yes, I did. I went and saw The Devil Inside, which is the horror film that apparently was made for about 50p, about the exorcism. And to be quite honest with you, it's a pile of wank.
Aww.
That doesn't
not
sound good.
Scary, doesn't go anywhere. It's rehashed every exorcist cliche in the book. Didn't do it as good as people have done it. And it's just shit. I gave it 2 stars when I reviewed it, purely because it does still have a little bit of tension and suspense in it, but you're going to get that with exorcisms anyway, because you're expecting something. But the problem with it is it never does anything. So you expect it, and then you get let down massively. Story is very basic, although quite an interesting idea, but done very weak. And it ends extremely abruptly, and it feels like a massive cop-out. Overall, I think in my review, I got to the point where I normally have a rule where I don't put eyes in reviews. I don't say I do this or I did that. But this review, I thought, fuck it. And I just basically went on a massive sarcasm spree. And I think in the review at one point, I said something like, if every road leads somewhere, then this 83-minute journey leads to a cul-de-sac, probably in Cornwall, and then just finished off the paragraph with the description of what these type of people living in a cul-de-sac in Cornwall would be like. And I think they had golden retrievers at one point as well.
Painting a word picture.
And it's just crap. The scariest part of the film was when a dog jumped at a fence. which for a horror film is a bit bad, really. Especially seeing as this was during the day in a very busy street and you didn't really see much of the dog.
So basically a shot of a fence getting slightly rattled.
And a bark.
Oh no.
It looked like a big dog, to be fair, but...
That's not
for
really
an exorcism
that,
film.
That great, though, is it?
Yeah. For an exorcism film, that shouldn't be your scariest part.
It's still not all that intimidating, I feel.
You are sorry?
No matter how big the dog is, I'm not going to be like, shit.
Yeah, there is a fence there, so we'll probably be all right.
I think that's what, when they show you the adverts on TV and they took those people to the cathedral and then they put night vision on. I think that's when the people jumped. It's when the dog barked.
Yeah, why do they do that now for horror films?
It was, like I said, it was made for about 50p, so they thought, I know, we'll show dickwads being scared by a shit film.
Oh, the scariest thing about it is the production quality.
Yeah.
The cover of the poster for it looks quite scary.
The blind nun?
Well, it's, yeah. It's
that fucking pissed me off as well.
Scratched inside her mouth.
She did carve an upside down cross into her bottom lip. But then when she went to show it to her, because it's about a girl whose mum was possessed and then an unofficial exorcism was performed on her. And during that, she killed 3 members of the church. And then she was taken to Italy and put in this mental asylum. Her daughter grew up and for the first time since she was 6 has gone to Italy to see her with the documentary crew to talk about possession and exorcisms, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, there's lots of upside down crosses being carved into flesh. It's all very tame. And effects are shit. Like when she pushes people across the room, you think, what the fuck was that? I could have done better and drawn something.
It does sound pretty shit, to be honest.
It's just every cliche going for an exorcist, and like I say, it just doesn't do it any justice whatsoever. I like the idea. Don't like the fact that it's another film that's been done in a documentary style and, you know, marketed as, this is real footage. The Vatican has not endorsed this. No, of course the Vatican hasn't fucking endorsed your film.
The Vatican hasn't really endorsed anything for about 300 years.
Unless you're molesting a child, it's not going to endorse you. it's not very good.
Well, it currently has a Metascore on Metacritic.com of 18 out of 100.
That's probably 8 too much. It's not very good at all. It's a complete waste of time. Doesn't go anywhere.
So there you go. Lewis Gaston watching films so you don't have to.
And if you're interested, because you're not going to watch it, I implore you not to. The ending is basically in a car. 3 people in the car. The director of the documentary is driving. A priest and a girl are in the back. Girl is apparently possessed. Screams a little bit. Car hits another car, rolls over, and people are dead, apparently.
Yeah. That sounds rather disappointing.
Thanks.
I wonder if we moan enough, will they remake an ending?
I'll remake an ending. With my cock.
Now I'm scared.
See? That's the trick.
There you go. Aspiring horror directors. Needs more cock.
That's the problem. I genuinely do believe that I could have done a better job. Or any of us could have. That we could have written a script and done it so much better. And yet, alas, it has become one of the highest sort of ratio budget to profit films of all time.
Well, it's easy when you make a movie for nothing.
Yeah, documentary style.
That's what Kevin Smith always said that. He said he'd always have work because his movies cost nothing to make and always, because they cost so little to make, they always make a profit.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading Twitter. And the lone Stephen, who is the lunatic that puts the questions thread up in the forum for us, has just tweeted. Bear in mind, he's playing Mass Effect 2 at the moment. He's just tweeted, oh shit, I think I may have accidentally started a romance with Kaiden, who's the man. Didn't want to do that. Thought the gift would be as a friend.
It's just clearly a generous man.
Yeah, he's just a generous man. He doesn't understand how BioWare make their games.
To be fair, that is kind of... That's something I've always seen parodied quite heavily with BioWare games. Is just any friendly option ends with you boning them.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the way to go. But Stephen, if you're listening, you can write to BioWare to express your discomfort and unhappiness with being forced into a gay relationship.
That's it. He's been channeled now. He's down that road. Yeah. 2 more conversations and he's got a mouthful of Kaiden Alenko.
Next thing you know, you're in a bukkake.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, dear.
All right. Pair of you.
Just
talk about.
I'll take it.
Talk about Game of Thrones now.
Hurrah!
Hurrah! I don't know about you, Peter, but I was a little bit... it's still great, don't get me wrong, but I thought as an opening episode to a much hyped TV show, it was a little bit flat.
I would agree with that. I absolutely adore the books are great and the universe is brilliant that it's set in and the way it's put together is fantastic. The TV show does a really, really good job of that. But this, as a first episode, this didn't really have anything... nothing really powerful about it. It had no big hit. Which is a shame, but there will, you know, obviously over the next two or three episodes, it'll pick up.
But I just think, because the last two episodes were of the first season were phenomenal. I just thought it opened a bit flat. And the only thing that was mildly sort of exciting was seeing, forgotten her name, with the dragons.
Yes.
Because I just thought, oh, it's going to be brilliant. There's going to be dragon wars and...
Daenerys.
Awesome. Daenerys, that's the one. But yeah, no, I just thought it was all a bit...
Yeah, I think the possibly the best scene was the scene with Cersei and Joffrey when she sort of realised that she didn't have the power that she thinks she has.
Yes.
That whole scene was quite tense, quite good, quite well done. But I think the problem is because the last series finished on such a high, and it's because it's translated from the books. So obviously the books finish on this big sort of reveal, and there's like cliffhangers built into it at various different levels as well. But then the second season, it's starting at the beginning of another book. So it's kind of building that up again.
Don't get me wrong, I expect it to carry on. And it was still a good episode because it's a good program, but... And I'm sure it'll come on to be a fantastic series.
It was one of those, though, that you watch and you think, well, I kind of wish the second episode was here right now.
Yeah.
Because, it, like you say, it didn't have that big wow factor.
I think, though, I love the way that Joffrey is starting to make me very nervous and uncomfortable. He's the little kid king, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's something about him. I feel very uncomfortable. It just seems like he's an absolute psychopath now.
Yeah, he has a very sadistic streak, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Like when his mum slapped him. I was like, oh, don't do it. He'll kill you.
Yeah, there's a little sort of callback in that as well, that scene and the scene with Daenerys and her brother. I don't know if you remember from sort of about halfway through the first series, whenever he hit her.
Yes, yeah.
When she had become the Dothraki queen and her brother slapped her and she stood up and told him not to do it again. But she did that in a way that was powerful and confident. Yeah. Whereas Joffrey did it in a way that made you think that he would probably like cut your tongue out or something.
Yeah, he's literally going to slit his own mother's throat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult because I've read most of the books now. So it's difficult not to reveal too much. But yeah, it's safe to say that Joffrey is... a little bit sadistic.
Yeah. But still, so, I mean, it looked great and the production values are still there. And in actual fact, when you saw the dragon climb off her shoulder and into her hand and into the basket, I actually thought, oh, wow, production values are really high because it didn't look like shoddy CGI.
Yeah, I thought they did the dragons really well.
Yeah, and the animation of going into her hand, because I... not purposefully, but once he moved, I was thinking it's going to look bad. So I was expecting it to look bad. So when he moved into her hand, I was looking to expect it to be quite poorly done. But it looked really, really real. And it was just brilliantly well done. And I thought that was quite good. So I like in the fact that they've retained such high values to it.
Yeah. And it's going to be, I don't think it's really spoiling anything to say that it's going to be really interesting through this series to watch those dragons grow.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is sort of a bit of a journey there for Daenerys and the Dothraki as well as those dragons grow up a bit. So yeah, it's going to be, I think like you say, it was a little bit flat for a first episode, but there's still a long way to go in the series and it is going to get better.
Awesome.
So there you go. Fantastic. I'm currently about a quarter of the way into the last book in that series so far.
Yeah.
How many books are there?
There's been 5, I think.
Why is there so many?
Yeah.
I like reading and I'd love to read it, but then I just think 5, that's quite a commitment.
Yeah, and there's the Game of Thrones and then there was Clash of Kings and Storm of Swords and Feast for Crows, and now we're on Dance for Dragons. But I think the third one was split into two parts when it was released originally, and the fifth one has been split into two parts as well in a lot of places because they're quite substantial. Yeah. So some of them are quite hefty, but they're well worth reading. They're really, really good books. And I think you can get them all at the minute on iTunes for like £20, and I think you can get them all on Amazon for a similar sort of price. On iBooks, sorry. Yeah. I think you can get them all on Amazon for a similar sort of price.
Well, look, I've just started reading Hunger Games, and there's about 50 million of those, isn't there? So
there's three of those.
Wow, close.
Talking of books, I haven't redone a lot this week, but because I've been away at a conference up in Bradford, which is very nice. But I, on the train there and on the train back, I was listening to some of the Halo audiobooks. In particular, I re-listened to Ghosts of Onyx because I realised I'd listened to it, but only about three quarters of it. So I missed the climax at the end, which is pretty awesome. And then I've been reading Glasslands, which half follows on from Ghosts of Onyx and half sets up like a new storyline. And they are rather good. The ending to Ghosts of Onyx, I it made me depressed because the ending is very sad and really depressing, but it also made me depressed that I hadn't finished it the first time I was listening to the audiobook, because it's a very strong ending. It builds really well to this final bit at the end. And it's wonderful. It's very well done. And I just finished Glasslands today. Again, that's very good. It sets in motion this whole new thing. So in Ghosts of Onyx, it was set over the course of about 20 years, but most of the book takes place within probably a month, and it's towards the end of the Human Covenant War. So roughly about the same time as Halo 3, whereas Glasslands is set after Halo 3, and is dealing with sort of the fallout of the Human Covenant War, which is quite interesting because if you look at how Halo 4 is set up, it's quite probable that you're not really going to be dealing with the Covenant or anything because of where he is. So it's nice that they're dealing with the after effects of the war in this book, rather than just going, and now the war was over.
And were these audiobooks you're reading?
Yeah, they're audiobooks, but you can get them as real books. I just like getting stuff as audiobooks because I like having something to listen to at work.
Yeah, are they on Amazon?
They're on Audible. Yeah, I have them from Audible is where I got them, but they're also on iTunes. So I've been getting them on Audible because I've got an Audible subscription, so you get like one free book a month.
Yeah,
and you pay like $7.99 or something. But if you just want to buy them, they're normally cheaper on iTunes because they're normally only about
$7.99 a month, and you only get one book.
Yeah, no, but given that an audio book is normally about £20,
really?
Yeah,
yeah.
Audio books are expensive, man.
They license the book and then they pay somebody to read it.
Yeah, so it makes it expensive. So it's about so $7.99 a month and you get one book a month, which is, I don't think it's too bad. And then you can get them on iTunes. They're a little bit cheaper in iTunes than they are on Audible. They're about, I think they're about £15 on iTunes and normally about £21 on Audible. So yeah, it's a little bit cheaper on iTunes, I found in general. I think that actually the main reason Audible's prices are more expensive is just to encourage you to go into the subscription plan.
Yeah.
Because then they've got guaranteed income from you. I really like this book. I've said this before, but I think the books do a much better job of looking at the Halo universe than the Halo games ever had. And also when you look at the sacrifices that other Spartans make, you actually realise that although Master Chief's this legend who ended like the war, you also kind of feel that what he did pales in comparison to some of the others. Mm-hmm. Like at the end of Ghosts of Onyx, the way that one of the main characters sacrifices himself nearly had me in tears because they've built him up for this entire book and made him this incredibly sympathetic character, very conflicted. And you get this feeling that he doesn't want to do what he's doing, but he's doing it because he knows it will win the war. And then at the end, sort of what he has to do to make sure the rest of his troops survive is deeply depressing and very emotional. And does a far better job of looking at what a Spartan in that universe is meant to be than the Halo games ever have.
It's easy to think, because Master Chief is this big, powerful character, it's easy to think that he's like the Superman of that universe, but he's not. He was just one of many.
He was one of many, yeah. And he was... there. By the time of Halo 3, there aren't many Spartans left alive. But... and also, it's kind of... the way it's written in the books, it's obvious why the Halo games make out that Master Chief was the last Spartan left. Because the way they're written kind of makes it that like there were secret Spartans and Spartans who are out of contact and that kind of thing. And to be fair, he was one of like four Spartans where people. No, I think there were four other Spartans that I've read and listened to in the books, where people knew who they were, like where they were at the time of it, and then there were others that were MIA and that kind of thing. It's kind of. In a way, I feel that the Master Chief is a less important character to me now. I'll still play the games and I'll still like the games, I expect. But compared to the sacrifices that others make, like, okay, yeah, he was a kind of, he had this bravery and he had this tactical genius that helped to end the war, but he hasn't sacrificed a huge amount in comparison to the others who have willingly not just thrown themselves into battle, but literally sacrificed their bodies, have gone on complete suicide missions so that one person could survive. And you kind of got that feeling in Reach as well, in Halo Reach, that towards the end, that your Spartan Noble Six, you play in that. His story over that is felt to me a lot more profound than Master Chief's, particularly the ending, because he literally just went, all right, fuck it, this ship needs to get away, and the only way I can do that is to essentially go on a suicide mission. That's kind of just
very in depth.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. People. No, I love Halo, but I hope that kind of explains a little bit. There's a lot more to it than the games.
There's so much to that universe. It's so, you know, those games, you play as Master Chief and you hear little bits and pieces here of the backstory, but because they've made the books and because they've had that sort of anime stuff that they did, there's so much to that universe that we don't, if you just sort of casually play the games every now and again when they crop up, you don't know about the rest of the universe. And it is a really deep universe. And whether or not you like the games, you might still enjoy the fiction of the universe.
I feel it's one of the best extended. I think it's better and more consistent, in my opinion, than Star Wars is, because I kind of feel that Bungie had a tighter plan laid down.
Yeah, they kept a hold of the reins, whereas Star Wars, when it went into its extended fiction, Star Wars was allowed to sort of squirrel away from Lucas.
Yeah, I mean, they were still like, it was still licensed by Lucas, but it was kind of, you felt they didn't keep as tight a control in the narrative.
Yeah, and it got gradually looser and looser as time progressed.
Yeah. Whereas with Bungie, there's, and now 343, that there's literally a Halo Bible, and it goes, no, these are the things that happen. And if a writer wants to do it, they apparently spend like 2-3 months like scrutinizing this thing to make sure that it doesn't conflict with anything else and the other potential storylines they might have in the future. And that kind of thing. And yeah, I love it. And this book's the start of a new trilogy about a different Black Ops team. Who are kind of interesting because they're Black Ops, but also sort of more on the intelligence side. So they're not like dropping into cover and doing the commander kind of thing. It's more about intelligence and spreading misinformation and that kind of stuff.
Cool. I've never actually bothered really much with the books or the comics or any of that shit that they make, but I've always been a little bit tempted to look into it because I've heard that it's so good.
Yeah, I would. I think you could probably... Fall of Reach is definitely a good place to start. I like Fall of Reach. It's a very good book.
Yeah, that's the name that you always hear.
Yeah.
Regards, so that's going to be the big one.
It's good and kind of... Although you could pick it up in other places, and it's not a direct line, but kind of that's like the storyline of the books kind of started with Fall of Reach, and it's spun off in a couple of different directions. But there's a few core characters who are introduced in that book that you kind of need to not necessarily complete it. You don't need to read to complete and understand what's going on in the future, but it'll help you a lot in kind of understanding what's happening in the motivations of some characters, and also provides a lot of background on the Spartan program itself, which is quite interesting. Which is something that's referred back to a lot in the later books, where one of the main characters sort of tries to reinvent history to justify her actions. So yeah, it's quite interesting. Things like that a lot of people don't realize that the Spartans weren't created to fight the Covenant, and that kind of stuff. It's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But enough of my slightly odd Halo obsession. going to the complete other end of the gaming scale, Peter, you've been playing Don't Do It, which is from the Peter Molyneux game jam, which happened this past weekend.
Did we talk about the Molyneux?
I don't think we did, really. No.
We'll just briefly explain what that was. There's a Peter Molyneux, who people will know as the former head of Lionhead, creator of Fable and various other games down through history. He's very famous for having these sort of grandiose ideas about games that he tries to implement these things, but he sort of has a bit of a reputation of them never quite coming off as well as he sold them, because he's such a sort of emphatic speaker. There was a parody account for him on Twitter called Peter Molyneux, Deux, and it's been for the past, I don't know, maybe a year, maybe longer, it's been tweeting these like game ideas, like the sort of the initial seed idea for a design document, which are in the style of Peter Molyneux. So there's kind of these airy fairy weird ideas, and it's very funny, and everybody should follow them on Twitter. I think it turned out to be, it was an English, like a small English developer that was doing it for a while. So it sort of transpired that it was him doing it, so we know who it is. But it's still going, and it's still very funny. And Peter Molyneux has at times sort of retweeted him and has interacted with him, and he's sort of in on the joke. So
he left Lionhead as well.
Since he crawled out from under Microsoft's corporate boot.
Yeah.
So a few weeks ago, somebody said, wouldn't it be great if we had like a game jam, which is like a set period of time, like 24 or 48 hours, where developers get together in a room and they posit and design and develop a game from start to finish within a set time period. So it's basically like just a really intense game design thing. So somebody said that it wouldn't it be good to have a game jam based on this guy's tweets, where every game had to be developed from one of his ideas. And that kind of sort of gathered a bit of pace, and then it was picked up by Patrick Klepek, that works at Giant Bomb, and various other people around the industry. But it gathered pace, and they ended up, of course that would be a good idea, so let's just do it. So they ended up doing it, and it was last weekend, and it took place in something ridiculous, like 19 cities around the world or something.
It was in Brighton.
Yeah, they had one in Brighton and one in London.
And there was also other places like Sydney and lots of places all around the world.
It's all over the world. They had like people gave over rooms and everybody got together and they did this.
Yeah.
The results of this are now on the website, which is, I'll just see.
whatwouldmolyneux.com.
So that's Molyneux, MOLYDEUX.com.
Yeah.
And all the games from it are on there. And you can go and download them and play them. Some of them are on Kongregate, so you can play them online. And some of them are pretty funny. So today I went and I was playing this game, and the tweet that this game was built from, that Peter Molyneux Twitter account said, was the idea was, you are a pigeon who must go around the city trying to persuade businessmen not to jump off buildings by retrieving items from their home. So that's the seed idea. So, and the game is, You know, that's exactly what the game is. So you play as a pigeon, and it's like a top-down view of a city, and it's like skyscrapers, and you can see little tiny, very pixelated, very sort of indie-looking, you can see little tiny pixelated people on top of buildings. And you fly over to them, and when you fly over to them, the scene changes, and you fly down and stand next to them, and you click on them, and they talk to you. And it's like text up on the screen, obviously, because these things are always done in a rush. So the first person I flew over to was quite obviously dressed in a Spider-Man outfit. And he was very depressed, and he was on top of this building, very depressed because his co-workers had tricked him into coming into work in fancy dress that day. They told him that everyone was doing it, and he turned up in fancy dress and turned out to be the only one. So he was very depressed about this, and he said that this would teach them when he threw himself off this building. But he said something about writing down his thoughts or writing down his feelings or something. So then you have to fly across to the other side of the map, and there's a little house, and you click on the house, the pigeon flies down and lands in the house, and it's like a bookshelf, and you pick an item off the bookshelf, and there was a pad and some paper. So then you click on that, and I picked the pad and paper, and then I flew back to the man that was dressed as Spider-Man, and you give him the pad and paper, and then he says, oh, that's brilliant, thank you very much, I'll write down my thoughts here, and then he gets better, and he decides not to jump off the building anymore. And that's it. That's the whole thing. And I think there was another three people. There was only one house that had all their belongings in it, but I assume that's a time constraint thing.
Probably, yeah, I would imagine so.
But this is it's very, very basic. But it's a fully functioning game that they've developed art assets for, and I don't think it had sound, but it had like controls and the little sprites, and a mechanic. And it developed in 48 hours, and it worked. It was really impressive. They're not going to release these games, although apparently some of them will now go on to be developed further, and they're thinking about releasing them on like iPhone and stuff.
Quite like the idea, the sound of you are a spy and the world is transparent. So that you can't hide. Sounds quite good.
Yeah. But this is, it's a funny account that spoofs Peter Molyneux. And Peter Molyneux is a really good sport about it. He turned up at the London one, I think, and gave like a speech before they started. And has said that he wants to, I think he's already said that if they do it next year, which they almost certainly will because this one was so successful, that Peter Molyneux would like to be involved at it. And he's already looking at people that have been involved in this and like thinking about hiring them for the new studio that he's setting up.
All right.
So it's cool. These things are a good thing, and Peter Molyneux is a really good sport for being involved with it. So it's all looking pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that the game industry does now and again that just makes you think, not everybody's nasty.
Let's all go and play Gap. Your child is made of Lego. You have to detach bricks to make bridges, etc. You need to keep adding bricks to stop him getting depressed.
Oh, you see, this is the thing that makes it, I think, is the fact that that parody account is so on the nose.
Yeah.
It's just so perfect. You know, that's because that is the way that Peter Molyneux talks. And that, you know, some of the things that parody account says, you kind of think, well, yeah, I could imagine Peter Molyneux having that idea.
Yeah.
But they are all a bit ridiculous as well. So, yeah, that's what I did. And I would urge everybody else, if they're looking for a way of farting about and wasting time while they're in work, to nip over to that website and have a play.
WrestleMania. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Fighting to survive. Pump it up, pump it up.
WrestleMania.
Were they pumping it up, indeed?
Yeah.
Did you watched it on DVD, didn't you? Your friend recorded it. Something.
I got a friend to tape it for me, like I was 10.
Yeah, I know.
It was brilliant. When I was a kid and I used to watch wrestling, like when I was like 10 or 11 and I used to watch wrestling, we didn't have Sky because we were poor. But my next door neighbour had it, and he used to tape all the big events for me. I used to nip next door and borrow his tape. So it was like that. It was like going back in time. Brilliant.
It was very good.
How did you find it? Good show then?
Yeah, the first match was shit.
Sheamus winning the thing was done, dusted very quickly. Didn't watch the Divas. Didn't watch the team match.
No, I fast-forwarded them too.
Orton and Kane was a good match.
Yeah.
What else was there? I didn't watch Codes and Big Show.
No, Big Show kills the momentum of anything.
Yeah, and I don't like Cody Rhodes either. He's just a bit weird. I thought the Punk Jericho match was a brilliant match.
Yeah.
Hell in the Cell was obviously a phenomenal match. I just think that was superb.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much as a wrestling match as it was just an out and out fight.
And it, like, if, I don't know, anybody that says, I mean, obviously it's predetermined and they work to scripts and all that sort of shit, but anybody that says wrestling is fake should go and have a look at that match, and they should look at the state of The Undertaker's back.
Yeah, that was fucking...
Because he was, like, Christ, he was hit with that chair, like, dozens of times. And you think, oh, it's
welts
the...
Welts and bruises, yeah, like, it's instant the, bruises.
It's like the funny, soft wrestling chairs that don't really hurt and all this shit. But he had these big welts on his back, and then by the end of the match, his back was purple.
Yeah.
And
he was not funny, soft wrestling chairs. They're the actual chairs that people sit on.
Well, yeah, but they're not, you know, they're not... You could take a hit from one of those chairs. They're only made out of, like, tubular steel and a little bit of...
Yeah, I know, but still, it's still metal.
Well, yeah. I suppose, and you know, probably and, you could take a hit from it, but not from somebody the size of Triple H.
And you did see the state of his back. And then at the end, when they were, like, obviously, the picking each other up, and I think it was Shawn Michaels picked up Undertaker and, like, gave him a hug and started patting him on the back. I was going, don't do that! You could clearly see it's quite painful.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was really good, really good match, and it was really physical and yeah, very impressed.
And I think for the because last year's WrestleMania and even the years before that, I think the crowd's been quite muted for a WrestleMania. But the I think the crowd in Florida were absolutely mental, which always makes the event seem so much more exciting.
See, I really only watch WrestleMania every year, and then maybe. Yeah. I'd maybe watch another show at some point and maybe one or two SmackDowns or Raws.
Because I watched Raw afterwards and it's still in Florida, different stadium obviously, but they tend to be the same crowd. Like they tend to get a Raw ticket chucked in with their WrestleMania ticket.
Right.
So you can spot quite a lot of the same people in that.
Wearing the same t-shirts.
Yeah, holding up the same signs. And it does just change the atmosphere of the entire show. Like I always cringe when they come over to Britain and they like and people like cheer for about 5 minutes and then it just goes completely deadly silent while they're wrestling and you think this is quite uncomfortable to watch. but yeah, no, I thought the crowd were brilliant. And then I think the Rock and Cena match was a brilliant classic match in terms of it was very old school. There was the whole put him in sleeper holds, the arm get raised up twice, and then I haven't seen that done for ages, and that was a proper old school wrestling match, I thought. Thought it was really good.
Yeah, although I didn't really care much about that match. I think after the CM Punk match and the Undertaker Triple H match, I think that was a bit of an anti-climax.
Yeah, that's the problem. That should have been the very last match.
The only thing is, at WrestleMania, I don't like gimmick matches too much at WrestleMania.
Yeah, there weren't any this year.
There was Hell in a Cell. That's what I mean. Like I at WrestleMania, I kind of feel it should just still be.
Oh, I thought you meant gimmick matches, as in like Doink the Clown versus.
Oh no. I mean, I don't like. I kind of feel to me. I know it sounds very old school, but I kind of always feel WrestleMania should be like very pure. Like I don't even like. I don't like it the years where they have a triple threat as the main event.
What are you talking about? The year when they had the Fatal 4-Way with McMahon in each
corner. I know, it was a good
classic.
It was a good match, but I always kind of feel that in some ways WrestleMania it is kind of this. WrestleMania to me feels like
I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it's kind of like the pinnacle of the sport. Like yeah. I and you kind of just feel it should be as pure as possible. It would be like introducing multi-ball into the FA Cup final to me.
See, I see where you're coming from. I don't necessarily agree with you. I think things like Hell in the Cell, cage matches, ladder matches, I think they all work to make a much more memorable.
I think you're probably right. I don't like
matches like shave your head matches or
yeah,
you know,
I mean
the paddle matches. I think they're a bit too
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I actually kind of agree. I think more what I feel is like the main event matches, I kind of feel should be very clean.
Yeah, I think in that Hell in the Cell case, it had gotten to the point where they'd obviously gone through
two
Shawn Michael matches, one Triple H match. So they'd already gone through three matches against the Undertaker. So it seemed like the Hell in the Cell was the final.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Put the whole thing to bed sort of thing.
Is that it now then for the Undertaker?
Surely it must be.
Yeah, I would imagine that he'd now retire on 20.
He is looking old, isn't he?
Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't do it at WrestleMania, actually, because I was half expecting the cage to go up and then him to announce that although he's won, that's it, he's done, and get the applause and respect that he deserves from a crowd of that size.
Yeah, and from a WrestleMania, which is what he's famous for.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although he'll be back. If he does retire in the next few weeks, he'll be back at next WrestleMania for the Hall of Fame, one would imagine.
Yeah, oh, surely. Yeah, yeah.
So I'll get it all then.
But I always kind of feel as well, I dislike WrestleManias where the championship match isn't the main event.
Yeah,
it hasn't been for a few years.
The World Heavyweight Championship match was the first one that was 18 seconds. It was
I know there's always two title matches now, but I think one of them should be the main event. It's just my personal
Punk and Jericho was the second to last. They were on before Rock.
Yeah.
It was on before Rock and Cena.
Yeah, that's just my... I know it kind of like... Because if you follow what I feel, you end up with a very formulaic WrestleMania. But... also, to me, that championship match at WrestleMania is meant to be special.
I agree with you there. I think obviously the only reason they did that was because obviously The Rock was winning. So
they literally just gone,
take as much time as you want to soak up the applause. But I totally agree with you. I think the championship match needs to be the top of the bill.
Yeah, I think and it's because I stopped watching wrestling really years and years ago. But whenever I was young, WrestleMania was about wrestling, and when they had the Royal Rumble, it was the Royal Rumble. They didn't have matches before it really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Survivor Series was 4-on-4 matches.
Yeah, that Survivor Series has gone back to that a little bit in recent
now.
Years,
they seem to, and whatever the event is, whatever the event's sort of gimmick is, they always seem to cram in these sort of singles matches or tag team matches before the event. Which is obviously because they have a much bigger roster of stars now and they have to accommodate everybody. But it just seems a little bit odd, a little bit strange. I think I would prefer it if it was more of a pure thing. Yeah. They also have far more events now than they used to.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that a lot of people have complained about. But I just kind of think that WrestleMania is meant to be different to every other show in the calendar. It's kind of, to me, this is as good as it can possibly get.
Spectacle.
That's kind of what annoyed me about that first match with Sheamus and Daniel Bryan. Neither of them, the belt changed hands, but neither of them, they got dressed for it and they went out in front of a WrestleMania crowd and they didn't get their WrestleMania moment.
I think that blatantly was a case of them going, we're in a situation where our champion has barely been in the business for more than 2 years, is he going to be able to hold a WrestleMania main event? So I think they've blatantly just got that one out the way as quick as possible, because neither him nor Sheamus have sort of proven that they can. I mean, Sheamus probably more so, but
no, Daniel Bryan way more than Sheamus.
Yeah, I mean, Sheamus has had more experience.
No, Daniel Bryan's had far more experience than Sheamus.
No, because Sheamus has been champion already.
Yeah, you look at Daniel Bryan's career. Seriously.
Oh, what, he did Ring of Honor and all that lot?
Yeah, Daniel Bryan was on the indie, I know it's not the same level, but Daniel Bryan was the top star on the entire American indie scene for 5 years. He, outside of WWE and TNA, he was probably one of the biggest stars in the country for a good time, which is also kind of why it pissed me off that he went on to NXT, because you're seriously? All right.
Yeah, you don't need it. Considering, I mean, everyone in the crowd was doing the whole yes, yes, yes thing. He was, he's got quite a big fan base behind him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
even though he's getting booed.
Probably got a bigger fan base behind him now after that match as well. The crowd seemed to support him for three matches afterwards.
Yeah. Raw was, on Raw the next day, they had, The Rock came out to do his, I respect Cena, it was a good match, blah, blah, blah. And halfway through that, the crowd just started going, yes, yes, and chanted. And you think, and Rock just had to laugh and sort of, I think, it, and then when Cena came out at the end, they all started doing it again. He was like, see, Daniel Bryan, you owe me one, sort of thing. So the crowd were doing their nuts for Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, and it's good wrestler.
And then obviously Lesnar came out and F5 John Cena.
I'd heard that was going to happen. That's interesting.
I'd not heard it. I didn't have a clue. And the Cena was doing, like, he was the end slot and he was doing his speech and he wanted to call out The Rock to shake his hand and that. And the crowd were going, we want Lesnar, we want Lesnar. And John Cena was just like, he looked a bit puzzled by it, but obviously he knew what was coming. But it never even dawned on me that they were doing it for a reason. I just thought, yeah, oh, he must be from Florida or something.
Yeah, it's
and they miss him, and then all of a sudden his music hit came out and F5.
It's because he quit UFC.
Yeah, he was losing all the time. Wasn't
he? No, it's because he got ill.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Cool. He's got a bowel disease or something, some kind of stomach disorder. And it really affected his training regime. And obviously, it means he's fit enough for WWE, but UFC is a completely different level of competition. Because for a start, it's actually competition.
It's an actual fight.
Yeah. I think last time it was a championship bout and he lost in like 18 seconds or something ridiculous. So he decided to retire after that because he just said, yeah, I'm not at the right fitness level to do this anymore.
Mm. Now he looks like he's lost shitloads, but he's still a massive chav.
Yeah, yeah, he's a big bloke, very big bloke.
He has a unit and a half.
We should probably move on though.
I don't know. Just keep going. Wrestling podcast now.
Colin Barr is loving this.
Yeah.
This is probably the only bit of the podcast he listens to. He fast forwards through all those games and movies and comic shit just to get to wrestling.
Wrestling, excellent. Alright, I guess we'll be fun from WrestleMania then. Quiz time.
I think we settled on the jingle for the quiz being psh, 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 quiz, something like that. yeah, this week's is a game quiz.
Okay.
Alright.
And, sorry, bear with you a second. Oh, for fuck's sake. Why are you doing that? That's... Oh, what a cunt.
Indeed, what a cunt.
Sorry.
Are we having technical difficulties?
No. Completely not the right time to be doing it, but I checked my email and wondered why the tattoo shop haven't got back to me, and I've just realised I got the email wrong. Sorry.
It's nice that you're focused on what's going on here.
It's because I opened my laptop and their business card was squished between the keys and the screen.
Oh, okay. You weren't just randomly like, this tattoo shop hasn't got back to me.
It's a game quiz. What I'm going to do is give you 10 literal or dictionary definitions of a game's title.
All right.
And you need to work out what they are. I think it'll be quite a high scoring quiz this week.
All right.
And then
I'll
chuck in a bonus point if you can tell me the theme.
Hmm.
All right.
Which again shouldn't be too odd. Okay. Question one. An act of traveling from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
Question two. The abode of souls of unbaptized children.
The abode of souls of unbaptized children.
Yep. Question three. Starting with fine dry powder consisting of tiny particles of earth or waste matter.
Can you reread that because Skype went funny?
Question three. Starting with fine dry powder consisting of tiny particles of earth or waste matter.
Okay. Hmm.
Question four. Cease to be a light before colliding. Question 5. Knot of sound mind and distorted shape blocking the light of a celestial body.
What?
Question 5. Knot of sound mind and distorted shape blocking the light of a celestial body. I don't understand why they didn't go for these titles, really, when they were releasing them. Question 6. Clothes of another for mission. Clothes of another for this mission, rather. Question 7. An aspect of 120 degrees.
Jesus Christ. This is weird. Impossible.
Yeah.
They are literally the definitions of the words. Or as I hope they are, because otherwise I'm stupid. Question 8. Arrange in a pile, typically a neat one.
Okay, yeah, that's easy.
Question 9. Interlace 3 or more strands to form a length.
Yeah.
And question 10. A bizarre planet where those you do not know seek vengeance. Do you want me to quickly run through them again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Question 1. An act of traveling from one place to another. Question 2. The abode of souls of unbaptized infants or children, whichever way you want to say it. Question 3. Starting with fine dry powder consisting of tiny particles of earth or waste matter. Question 4. Cease to be a light before colliding. 5. Knot of sound mind and distorted shape blocking the light of a celestial body. 6. Clothes of another for this mission. 7. An aspect of 120 degrees. 8. Arrange in a pile, typically a neat one. Question 9. Interlace 3 or more strands to form a length. And question 10. A bizarre planet where those you do not know seek vengeance. How many do you think you got?
I've got 4 that I know I got, and I'm trying to work out what another one is.
I've only answered 4.
I've got a guess at another one.
Okay. Okay, then. Question 1. An act of travelling from one place to another.
Journey.
Yay! 2. The abode of souls of unbaptized infants.
Limbo.
Yay! 3. Starting with fine dry powder consisting of tiny particles of earth or waste matter.
From dust.
Oh, yes. I didn't get that. Yeah.
It's from dust. Question 4. Cease to be a light before colliding.
Nothing.
Burnout crash.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Jesus.
Question 5. Knot of sound mind and distorted shape blocking the light of a celestial body.
No.
Oh, okay. Is it Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet?
It is Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet.
Because I'd
Knot of
down...
sound mind, distorted shape, and blocking the light.
I'd written down something eclipse. I was like, oh, of course, yeah.
So it's all even at the moment. Question 6. Clothes of another for this mission.
Nope.
No.
That was Costume Quest.
Of course, yeah.
Question 7. An aspect of 120 degrees.
No. Get it.
Nope.
Trine.
What?
Dick. That's what trine means.
Yeah, right.
Question 8. Arrange in a pile, typically a neat one.
Stacking.
Yep. Number 9. Interlace 3 or more strands to form a length.
Braid.
Aww.
Yes, it is braid. Chris is in the lead just by one. And
I
then
was thinking there's no games called plait.
That's what I did as well at the start.
And then question 10. A bizarre planet where those you do not know seek vengeance.
I don't know, because I put in Sunny Twisted Chair Planet for this as well, but I know it's wrong, obviously.
No, I didn't get this one.
That is Oddworld Stranger's Wrath.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So Chris wins by 1.
Ooh, and our bonus point, obviously, they're all downloadable games.
They are. In which case, Chris still wins by 1.
Yeah.
Yay!
Go me! Yay. Woo! 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 All right. In that case, it's question time.
Question time.
All right. Colin Barnes says he expects a wrestling discussion in this week's podcast, which he definitely had.
Yeah.
I don't think we could do any more. We can't do more wrestling on this podcast, I feel. I think everyone else will turn off.
Sorry, what happened there? Oh,
that's right.
See, Lewis has already turned off.
Mindy Lipscomb says, what do you think about all the people complaining about there being black people in Hunger Games? Obviously, it's ridiculous. And he also says, before anyone picks up on how that is written, I meant what people were saying was ridiculous. I wasn't being racist, honest.
There you go.
What's
Carl
being
Lipscomb?
Ridiculous?
Carl with a C, Lipscomb. Racist.
All right.
What was this question? Why he's probably black a people homophobe in Hunger too. Games?
What do you think about all the people complaining about there being black people in Hunger Games?
Is this because Hunger Games is about people being hunted or something, isn't it? It's like,
I'm not quite sure, maybe.
Kind of like the Running Man, like people that are hungry having to play games for their food or...
Yeah, I don't know.
I haven't got a fucking clue what Hunger Games is.
I know it's kind of...
It's a television contest.
Yeah.
Fight to the death.
It's kind of like kind of like Battle Royale.
Yeah. And is the controversy that they are black people that are competing in this?
I don't really know, maybe.
That makes no sense. Why would you complain about that?
Anyway, whatever. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
yeah, just agree with
fucking
Mini Lipscomb.
Absurd.
Apart from when he's being racist. Don't agree with him then.
Yeah. Or homophobic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. Complaining.
And when he hates women. I find it hard to agree with him when he's hating on women.
I know, it's terrible, really.
And old people.
poor Mini Lipscomb.
No, I agree with him then. fucking old people.
I did answer this on Twitter, but we'll go back and do it anyway to be reasonable. Tough Cub says, just listening to this week's podcast, I assume he means, and my question is this. Does Chris ever read books instead of kiddie comics? After which he proceeded to troll me about how comics are crap and graphic novels are good. Yeah, I do. I talked about Halo books I've been listening to, which I guess, does that count? They're audiobooks. I haven't been reading.
You read books. You read Freakonomics.
But yeah, I read. I haven't read Freakonomics. I've only seen the film version.
Oh, bad example.
But I've read. I've read. at the moment, I'm reading American Gods again for the second time because that book's wonderful. And I have like sitting immediately next to me about 300 books. So yeah, I do read. What do I like at the minute? I've got back into Sherlock Holmes at the minute. There was a period I liked Jeffrey Deaver, but I've kind of gone off whodunits a bit at the minute. What else have I been reading recently? Oh, I've been reading what's it called? The True
Always the Caretaker in a Mask.
No, they're not all Scooby Doo. I've been reading a weird book which is called The True Meaning of Smeck Day, which is an odd sci-fi book about an invasion of Earth. I think it's actually kind of pitched at kids, but I quite liked it. It's pretty good and quite interesting.
You're not helping Tough Cub's kiddie.
I know, but it's quite interesting because it's all written from the a first person perspective. Because
well, Harry Potter was for kids, wasn't it? That
yeah,
was good.
But the whole book is kind of conceived as a collection of essays that this kid wrote after the invasion was completed about the invasion entering into a writing contest, which is quite interesting. I think that's kind of stuff I've been reading recently. Yes, I don't think I've been reading anything else recently. But yeah, no, I definitely read books. I love books. I've gone on to audiobooks a bit at the minute because I'm just generally busy, so I can listen to an audiobook while I'm doing something else. But yeah, no, I feel that I'm fairly well read in general, and I have weird stuff like the Communist Manifesto and Darwin and stuff that I've been reading a little bit, but it's
Mein Kampf.
It's difficult.
Oh, sorry, that's it's called the Bible now, isn't it?
And also, a weird book that I'd recommend for anyone, because I really enjoy it. It's one of my favourite books, actually. Is if you can find it, I think it's his first autobiography. It's Tony Hawk's autobiography, The Skater. I know that will probably sound stupid to a lot of people, but it's actually quite interesting. And it's got a bit in there about them making the game, but it's got a lot. It's got a lot about him like turning pro, because he turned pro when he was like 16, and it's talk about him having like a shit ton of money when he was 16 and still in high school, and like having his own house when he was in high school because he had to buy a house because it's a tax write off, and stuff like that. Yeah, it's really good and very interesting, and talk about how also. Fans can be very ungrateful, like the time he skated on two broken ankles, because otherwise the crowd were going to riot. Yeah, that's a very good book. I think we could skip over. Did you finish watching WrestleMania from Colin Barker? Yes. From Teflon. Oh wait, no. RT for memory. This is from you, Peter. So I guess this is a question from Teflon.
Yeah, because Teflon tweeted it, but he is protected on Twitter, so his stuff wouldn't show up in the search. Okay. So I retweeted it.
Do you think that native resolution should have been made mandatory? What? Oh, okay. Do you think that native resolution, so the native output resolution, should have been made mandatory for all PS Vita games?
Yes, I do think that.
Yeah.
Because some Vita games still do a decent enough job, but they don't run at native resolution and they tend to look a bit shitty for it.
Yeah.
And that's a shame. And that thing should have enough power at this point that they should be able to get stuff running on it at native resolution.
Yeah.
So, yes, it should.
Josh Hood also says, do you equally think the 720p at least should have been compulsory for PS3 games? Yeah, probably. But it's a harder solution there because it's more technically challenging.
Yeah, I think that yes, in an ideal world it should have been. However, seeing the fact that the PlayStation 3 struggles sometimes to run stuff which is like SD,
yeah,
like some of the Call of Duty games and stuff which are actually not running in HD resolutions, the PS3 can struggle with those. I think that it's good that they didn't make that compulsory, because that would have meant that a lot of third party developers just said, well, no, we can't do it then.
Either no, or would have made very poor quality ports, even poorer than we than there was already in the early lifespan.
Yeah, because the PlayStation 3 is difficult to program for, the third-party developers tend to not do their best work on that platform as it is. So any other barriers in the way would have made it even more difficult.
Exactly. Chris Clark just tweets TSA cast for some reason. AG too many numbers. Tweets TSA cast hashtag TSA cast hashtag colossal crab.
Okay, I think this is probably because I started lifting weights at the start of this week again for the first time since I had that problem with my chest after Christmas, and after 2 days of it, I couldn't really straighten my arms anymore.
Oh, okay.
So he's probably taking the piss out of me there, which is fair enough.
Tony Cooley says, "Who would you rather play Naked Twister with, Samantha Brick or your own mum?"
Probably Samantha Brick.
Yeah, I really don't want to play
on account of the other thing being even more gross, and also my mum's in a wheelchair, so she'd be shit at Twister.
Yeah, although that would mean you'd win.
Yeah, but can in that situation does anybody really win?
No. I think
I wouldn't call it a win when you're dangling your ball sack over your mum.
Although I think Samantha Brick is an idiot for being all, oh, would people hate me because I'm beautiful? She's not exactly ugly either. She's just kind of average. So,
oh, no, she is ugly. She's got a face like a busted sofa. But she's also not an idiot. I mean, she wrote that and she knew what was happening.
Yeah.
She knew how it would be taken and she made a fortune out of it.
Yes, exactly.
Fair play. Fuck her. Dozy old munter.
And then the Lone Steven says, how is it that Chris is away for a week and TSA has not had something go completely wrong with it?
Because we keep a very professional, public-facing view. However, I did manage to balls up the scheduling, so
at least twice that I know of.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I'm glad that to the public that all looked like it was going smoothly. Yeah. I'm also very glad that Chris is back.
Yeah, I know there were at least two occasions, and one of them, when I got, I won't say what happened, but when I got that email from Alex, I just went, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Because that was like the first day I was away as well.
Yeah.
I think I got that and I was like on the train to Leeds with my friends. Because we went from London to Leeds and Leeds to Bradford. And we were on the train to Leeds with my friends. And they're like, what's wrong? I just went, my editor's a fucking idiot.
but no comment.
It was my fault because I didn't pass on certain bits of information.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just... Yeah, that was just really bad and quite amusing.
Yeah, but it all went okay.
Yeah, we won't say particularly what happened because we don't want to talk about it. But yeah, that was quite it was quite amusing and something that I feel only we would do.
Yeah.
Yeah. yes, but we're of course totally professional here at the Sick Voices. Oh, yes.
Of course.
Forum question.
Is this when Tough Cut put up a picture of Journey the band?
No, oh, no, because no, that's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, that was last week as well.
He did that, and now I think Alex has refused to change it.
Yeah, no, we've still got it.
Because why would we change it? Oh, you know what we mean, anyway.
Yeah, that's our unique selling point. That's what TSA does that nobody else does. We have a little joke.
As long as you know what we mean, it's fine.
Yeah, and even if you don't, we'll explain.
Just come to us afterwards and we'll have a chat.
Yeah, we don't mind talking you through our jokes.
Because we're going to keep making them.
Yeah.
So get on board or fuck off.
Basically, yeah. Right.
Shall I do the forum questions?
Yeah, you can. If you've got them up.
Okay. Okay, Solid Steven, I'm going to skip all the shit at the beginning.
And remember, Stevens. He's already asked one question, so...
Okay, so we'll pick one. Oh, fucking hell. Steven, half of these don't make sense.
The first one does.
Steven doesn't make sense.
Steven says, will Peter, that's me, abuse his powers in order to get the Normandy models from Pink Cowboy Hat... A.K.A. Mr. Too Many Numbers. Assume he means the models of the Normandy from Mass Effect 3 that Adam managed to secure from his friends at EA that we're going to be giving away in a competition this Easter weekend. He got two models. If he was within driving distance, I'd probably be burglarizing him.
Joe, I have one in my house.
Yeah, Davs has one.
Because Davs won the Shop 2 competition, yeah.
Adam lives up near Birmingham somewhere, I think.
Yeah. I'd do you a favour, but he's a bit far away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Adam secured these two models in Normandy, and he's going to give them away in competitions, and he's not going to give them to me.
Yeah.
Would've quite annoyed about that.
In fact, he would have given them away by the time this is out.
Yeah, I think that, the competition is closing on Monday, so if you won, good luck. If you want to donate your prize to me, all the better.
Yeah.
Or, if not, let us know your address.
Yeah. Give us your address. We need to send them out to you. They might get lost in the post. Don't worry about that.
All right. Next up.
Haslam
the Lion.
Who is one of my favourite podcast listeners because she always gives the best comments. She says she has a couple of questions. She says, have any of you guys seen Chronicle yet? And if so, what did you think?
No, I really want to. We talked about it in the podcast, didn't we?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, but I think we talked about it just before it came out.
Yeah, I really want to see it, but I haven't seen it.
Or just after it came out, wasn't it?
Same here, I really want to. But
yeah, I really want to, but haven't yet.
It looks brilliant, though, and the special effects look incredible.
Yeah, I should actually... I'm going to try and make an effort to see that.
Yeah.
Cause
it's out of the cinemas now, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
You'll have to wait for DVD, I think.
Oh, I might get a shit cinema that's still showing it.
But it also, it might be quite quick turnaround to DVD because it's a smaller movie. Sometimes they do.
Even the big ones are quite quick turnaround now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. She also says, she asked a question about the ending of Mass Effect 3, but I think we've talked about that enough.
Yeah.
And she says, which comic book that hasn't been turned into a film yet would you like to see reach the big screen and who would you cast?
Oh, Jesus.
Peanuts.
Calvin and Hobbes.
That would be brilliant.
That would be brilliant,
I want a Calvin and Hobbes movie.
Calvin and Hobbes would be
There's a couple of answers. Like, the obvious answer would be something like Runaways, because that'd be amazing.
Yeah, Why the Last Man? But they have talked about a film for that for like 4 years now, and last I heard they were talking about trying to cast Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Which would
be terrible.
Quite annoying.
If we're going for like more obscure stuff, not the obscure, but smaller stuff, something like Ex Machina would be wonderful. That would work well.
The Boys.
The Boys.
Boys would make an awesome film.
Yeah, I don't know how much you could... I think The Boys, to me, would be a better TV series.
Yeah, I think comic books generally would work better in TV series formats because of the episodic nature of them.
Yeah, I also think The Boys work well because it's a nice... It's a very nice kind of series structure already built into The Boys.
Yeah.
Even more so enough than other comic books, you kind of feel like you could quite easily imagine each collection in The Boys being a season or like half a season working quite well. The other one I'd love to see, which is a huge one, but I think would be wonderful in maybe 5-10 years, do Marvel Civil War.
I thought that myself, with them setting up this Avengers stuff, they could sort of do the 2 or 3 movies that the Avengers are going to have in them.
Yeah.
And then let that settle for maybe another 4 or 5 years and then do the Civil War stuff. Would be quite cool.
Yeah.
But by that stage, we're talking like 10 years in the future.
They wouldn't let it ride past. They've already settled a new Batman trilogy for 2014.
Yeah.
But sort of, flesh. I'm hoping that Marvel are playing the long game and they'll keep fleshing the universe out a bit more. And then you could do something like that. Because they've got stuff like Doctor Strange movies in the works. So, yeah, that would be
cool.
I'd
also quite like to see a Flash movie.
A Flash movie could be cool. Yeah, I'd like to see more DC properties in general would be good.
Yeah.
Properties.
I think I'm reading the Flash comic books for the 52 reboots.
Yeah.
And it's really, really good. I'd never had no experience of the Flash before, but I'm really, really enjoying
it. Yeah, it's good. I think the Flash could work well. I'd definitely like to see the Flash. I'd love to see a remade Constantine movie. Just ignore the last one.
Yeah. I want to see a proper Punisher movie.
Yeah.
All the ones that have been done are shit, but I just think there's so much.
I think the ones that they've done have been done on very low budgets, and I suppose because that kind of movie you can't really do for a PG-13 crowd, can you?
No.
So they have to be.
No, you really can't do that for a PG-13. That's just not going to work.
Yeah. That's quite a selection we've come up with.
There you are, lots of them.
Hopefully Hazel will be able to get on that for us. Make that happen. I assume she has the power. She asked the question.
Yeah, so obviously. Yeah. We didn't really talk about who we'd cast, but it's tricky. Because we talked about so many and there's so many different characters in some of them.
Well, who would you cast in The Flash?
Yeah, we could do that. That is tricky. Who would I cast The Flash? Who would you cast?
I don't know. It's a difficult one because he has to be sort of, you're looking at somebody sort of around about 30, mid-30s.
Yeah.
And he has to be fairly reasonably well-built at least.
I don't know nothing about Flash, but I'd say Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
That'd probably work quite well. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would work.
Go for that.
Yeah, there we are.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one is from AG2297, who is Adam, who is the man with the Normandy models. So we will definitely read his question out, just in case he's feeling generous. copy and pasted from last week's thread, because everyone was talking about fish, and if they smell when you first catch them, so you ran out of time to read it. That's how professional we are. He says, to all of the podcast, if time was not a problem and you had a reasonable amount of money to invest, what 2 things would you like to change or add to the Sixth Axis and Screen Demon? Silence. Nobody wants anything. I would, if I had
TSA
any
TV.
Sort of substantial money to invest, I would like to open an office that we all worked in so that we could basically just set cameras up and do podcasts and prick about. I think that TSA one of the things that TSA has going for it is the character of it, and the fact that we do like a bit of a joke and we do mess about and we're not afraid to make sort of embarrass ourselves and let people have a laugh at our expense. And I think that if we all worked in the same office, we could do that like every week. And I think that would be really cool.
It'd be fucking ridiculous as well.
Yeah. I mean, if we were all in the same office, we'd still be able to get all the same shit out that we do at the minute. But we'd also be able to do all the extra stuff with video cameras.
Yeah.
And that would be awesome.
More videos of me dancing.
It would be awesome to be able to have that office and have Lewis in it as well.
Yeah.
In the broom cupboard.
Yeah. With Eddie Duck.
Yeah. Films is over there.
Running screen demon from the corner.
I'm not allowed to talk.
Shh. So that's what I would do. I think that would be awesome. And that also ties on to what Adam says about please keep giving Peter positive encouragement to do more TSA TV or something along the same lines. Mm. So that's what I would like to do.
Do you want to do it soon? I'm just going to get a fucking video camera and do it myself.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. And
just
I went back
me.
And I,
just me. Just there.
I was watching some of the old TSA TVs and like, I'm quite modest and I don't like to blow my own trumpet, but those old TSA TVs were really quite good. And I'm kind of thinking that I would just like to do them again. So I probably am going to do something. I don't know if I'll be able to stick to a schedule or be able to do it with any sort of regularity, or I can't promise anything, but I'm just going to have a go.
If you don't do it, it's just going to be half an hour of me just staring into a camera. And it'll just be really awkward.
And then just get to the very last snippet of the movie is just you having a wee wink.
Yeah.
Staring for half an hour. And then there's the little wink, fade to black. Done. Yeah, but yeah, I talk about wanting to do TSA TV every couple of months. I go, Jesus, that was really fun. I'd quite like to do that again. And then I sort of work out that I don't have time or it's too difficult logistically, but I think I should just do it. Fuck it.
Yeah, the problem is that if you keep second guessing yourself, you won't do it. So
yeah.
If you just go, fuck it, just do it, you'll do it.
Yeah, this is like I say, I can't promise to do one every week or I can't stick to a schedule or it might be shit, but I'm going to have another go and see what I can come up with. I think video content is something that TSA especially sort of lacks. That we can do really quite well, and we should do more of it.
No, essentially, anything you'd change at Screen Demon?
I'd like there to be like more regular stuff, because obviously we only write about stuff as and when we get to see it.
Yeah.
So if you had infinite money, I'd like to be able to get to a point where you can have press passes for screenings or get invites to special screenings. That way you don't have to remortgage every time you want to go to the cinema. And then hopefully with that would come that if you're in a position like that, you could get to have interviews and sort of special pieces with people in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
I mean, even at the size we are at the moment, we did the interview with director and writer of Time Crimes and all that, which was brilliant. But that was thanks to Twitter and that. So
yeah, and he's working with Mark Millar at the minute, isn't he?
Yes, they're working on Super Crooks. Yeah,
Mark Millar.
He's going to be quite big, actually. Is it Val Big Vagalondo or something? You call him
Nacho Vigalondo.
Yeah, he had an odd name, Spanish
Nacho!
Name.
Nacho.
Nacho, Nacho Man.
I think.
Yeah, Nacho Vigalondo.
I think the main thing I'd like to do is just hire Stephen Totillo. Not for any real reason, just to kind of have him. Seems
Stephen
like a nice
Totillo,
man.
Just to get him off fucking Kotaku.
Yeah.
So that we don't have to read that shit anymore. Would be nice. Yeah, he does seem like a nice man. As did Brian Crescente before him.
Yeah, that's really the only reason.
Which is not a paradox. I really don't like what I've learned. Like, no harm to them. They're doing their own thing and they do it well. But I really personally don't like Kotaku, don't like what they do. But I really do like some of the people that work there. Seem like really nice guys.
Yeah. Or Steptoe. We could hire Steptoe.
He's out of work at the minute, isn't he?
Yeah. We hire him. That'd be
and
right.
Your man, Josh Olin, yeah. 402, he's out of work at the minute. We could get them. Set up a superstar team, get the band together.
And just not really do anything after that.
Yeah. Just hire them and. Well, I think if we had those two, we could just get them to send their Twitter followers to the website and we wouldn't have to worry about actual content.
It's true.
Just get by on that traffic for a couple of months.
Yeah. And I'd also like to buy a bear. It's just...
You've got a bear.
Yeah, tough cop.
No, like an actual bear.
Well, strip him off, oil him up. He'd be like an actual bear.
You would. Bears what? Are bears oily?
They are when I have them.
Oh, fair enough.
In the words of Sheldon, bears are terrifying.
Oh, and we'd buy a wagon. We'd buy wagon wheels.
I wouldn't buy wagon wheels.
Oh.
Actual wagon wheels?
No, the chocolate.
Oh. No, don't do that.
No, pass. Oh,
so plenty of other good biscuits out there.
If anything, I'd have penguins before I had wagon wheels. Just so I can say, Chris, do you want one of these? And when you said yes, I can say, tell me what they're called.
Then it'd be like a penguin as you feed it fish, just chucking a biscuit. Good boy.
Right.
That's it. That's all of our questions.
That's all the questions. And we've revised our time down to aim for about an hour and a half. That's an hour and 43 minutes. That's not too bad.
Yeah, but we have it's to cut first, out that big racist tirade that Lewis went on.
Yeah, that's true.
That's yeah, about 15 minutes we're going to have to cut out.
That's a lot gone
just
there.
I don't know. Say one word and all of a sudden you get tagged for life.
Jeez. I mean, to be fair, he's nothing like as
that
bad.
That was G's, by the way, not Jews.
He's not as bad as Millie Lipscomb, to be fair.
No, oh God, no.
Yeah. I ring him up sometimes and I would talk about something else, but it's all he's doing. Just yeah. constant.
Millie Lipscomb is a vile bigot.
It's constant. I'm really sorry.
I've heard that Millie Lipscomb has passages from Mein Kampf tattooed on his back.
I have to say, I'm really sorry, Carl. I don't know why we're doing this.
Don't apologise to him. It's people like him that created Hitler.
We're doing it because he's a horrible racist. People like that have
wait,
to
wait,
be
wait, 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 wait. Created Hitler?
Yeah.
Mecha Hitler.
Are you implying Hitler was some kind of clone or something?
Everyone knows.
All right, then. That's perfectly reasonable.
Jeez, catch up on your history, Chris. It's not like it's a well-documented thing, is it?
Also, that's another thing about Mass Effect 3. Right, cloning exists in Mass Effect 3, yeah?
Does it?
Well, like in Mass Effect, the start of Mass Effect 2, they clone him, don't they? Because he was, like, half dead.
No, he's not cloned. There's, like, nano machines and stuff that they put into him.
Oh, I was hoping there was cloning. Because then you could have, like, a hot threesome, but they're just all Shepard.
There is a little bit of cloning, but I think it's outlawed. I think it's illegal, and they sort of talk about it like they maybe clone organs and stuff, but don't clone actual full people. Okay.
I was going to say, if there was cloning, I'd just go, all right, let the Reapers come. And then when they come down, just go, fuck it, take what you want. We'll just clone everyone.
Yeah. Got loads more people where they came from.
All right.
Who's the loser now?
This has been... I just got weird now. It's fairly weird anyway. Episode 59 of the Oscar Mike Media Podcast. I have been, as per usual...
Nigger! May have to edit that bit out as well.
Edit point. This has been episode 59 of the Oscar Mike Media Podcast. I have been, as per usual, your host, Chris Lipscomb. You can get me on Twitter as HalPro.
Disgusting.
You can find Peter... who is the editor-in-chief of thesyncfactors.com and Magic Dragon Oscar Media on Twitter as Colossal Blue. And you can get Lewis, who is just a fucking cunt who makes my job so much harder than it would be otherwise.
Why would you say that, Chris?
You get him as Lewis Gaston on Twitter.
Don't push me. We haven't finished yet. I could make it a lot harder if you wanted to.
Thank you for listening.
That's what you say to all the boys.
And we'll be... Oh, Jesus.
Since EA, I can't help it.
Since you were forced to sit through those gay love scenes.
Yeah, since I've been brainwashed.
Now you can meet a man without taking him down an alley for a quick handy.
We'll be back next week. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Take a couple, because I've got big hands. So. Bye.
Oh, Jesus.